Hello, everyone.
Hello.
And welcome back to Film Corner.
You found yourself back in the Film Corner.
It's now, for those of you who aren't familiar with it, the concept of Film Corner is three guys.
Just regular guys.
Three just regular guys with an average, somewhere between an average and slightly lower than average interest in cinema.
And certainly knowledge of cinema.
Yeah, okay. I'd say well below average, I'd say.
Yeah.
Corner you and insist on talking to you about a film or films that they've seen.
And if you haven't seen the film, it'll be frustrating. And if you have seen the film, you'll understand how wrong we've got it.
And possibly more frustrating. Yeah.
Yeah, so either way.
And there's really very little right of reply.
But I think it's... It's just sort of one of those things, isn't it, Film Corner?
That's the slug line.
That's the slug.
It's basically a way to give Mike an excuse to go to the cinema. Would we say?
Which was effective, and I got an airing this week.
Oh, well done!
Splendid.
Where did you go to the cinema?
The only place in Exeter that was showing today's film was View.
Okay, multiplex.
It's a multiplex. Yeah, the options really in our neck of the woods. There's the Picture House. We do have a Picture House. Thank you very much.
Hmm. But that's just a big picture of a house, isn't it?
That's right. Yes.
Yeah.
And you are very welcome to sit there and imagine whatever film you like.
Yeah.
So I'll often sit there and imagine Die Hard.
Right, yeah.
In real time.
Happening in the different windows of the drawing of a house.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it all has to be set within the house, doesn't it?
It's cheaper than a VHS.
It is. And it makes the imagination
gland.
Makes the imagination gland throb.
No, not the way I do it. Very, very plain, original route one. All of the sort of interesting stuff is absolutely stripped out.
Yeah.
And it's just some gunfights, really. And some broken glass. That's what I'm picturing.
And zero character development.
Oh, none of that. Yeah, get rid of all of that.
Yeah.
Henry, this film we're going to do today was, I think, kind of your choice, basically.
Mm. It was. And I'd like to... Well, I'd like to kick off, I think, with an apology.
Oh, really?
Ah, okay, but maybe
that's
not.
That's a bit premature, isn't it, Henry?
Maybe I don't need... No, that is premature. In that case, I'd like to kick off quickly by just asserting... Because in a way, life is a film, isn't it? And we're all a character in that film, and that character has to make costume choices.
Are we talking about what you're wearing today?
We're talking about my shirt, which, because Mike's pointed out just before we started recording that it's very lime green, which is true.
Mm-hmm.
But also, because I can see myself because of the format that we use, I'm just aware that I've spent my whole life, I would say, stuck between two button choices.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of people suffer from this. I'm not the first person to observe this. But you know, this shirt really, because this to me is too...
Is it short sleeved?
It is short sleeved as well.
I think, given we're in August and it's short sleeved, I think it invites the second button to be undone.
I've unbuttoned the second button. So I've got.
This is giving me car dealer on holiday.
Okay, but am I still trying to sell you a car even though I'm off the clock?
Yeah. Definitely. Yeah. You meet a couple on holiday and you spend the whole week sort of building up the idea that they need an Audi A3. It's kind of what you're...
Yeah, and the mother-in-law needs a Mazda.
Yeah. I know. Yeah.
I had this exact same problem, Henry, or sort of, when yesterday I went to my parents' house just to say hi, and we had a sandwich in the garden. It was very nice. And then when I left, I realised my shirt had been undone three buttons down the entire time.
Sending very, very mixed messages to your own parents.
With like proper, like, you know, bush.
Oh, God.
You know, there was bush.
Yeah, because you've got decent chest bush, haven't you?
I've got proper bush, yeah. So, yeah.
It's true. Ben, you've got the bush of a much more sort of a different personality type.
Yeah.
To your personality.
Do you think my personality type is sort of hairless little worm?
Yeah.
But from the neck down, you're full blown Nebraskan hunter.
You're the kind of guy that just cracks buds in half. And just doesn't even just
opens them on his chest hair.
Open them on his chest hair.
I don't know what my parents must have thought when I was just sort of bowled up with a full...
I expect they thought you were horny as hell.
And you'd significantly widened your sort of,
your influences.
Your influences. So it's tricky though, isn't it, Ben?
Because it is tricky.
Three down is way too much, obviously. But
before we began recording, I did up an extra button. Because I saw myself, like you, Henry, I saw myself.
Well, it depends on the rug. You see, because Ben, your chest rug really pops.
Yeah.
Pops hard.
Yeah.
It looks like something is about to escape. It looks like you've stolen a rare mammal from a private collection.
Yeah.
Yeah, Henry's is less intrusive. Henry's is quite, I've always, you've got a very sophisticated chest rug, I think.
Well, you know,
there's silvers and reds in it and...
Yeah, there's a whole...
Oh.
It's a whole panoply. But also, I am getting quite self-conscious now. Mm. But the trouble is, I just think having it open looks, I think the word is louche.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Which I'm not entirely sure what louche means.
But you're the Francophile.
It feels right. I know, I should know.
Just say the words like, just imagine, imagine how much an estate could change your life. You know, people think about, you can get the golf clubs in, a couple of golf clubs, a couple of sets of golf clubs in the back of that with the, with the estate. And of course, if you kick it up to the 2.2 litre V6, then you're going to start turning heads in the car park of the golf club.
Yeah.
And it's not that much a month just to go to 7 CDs, is it? It's not that much, really.
It's not that much.
It's just another $79.99 a month, and you've got 7 CDs.
Yeah, sure, you could cut some corners and choose the 5 CD version, but this is a legacy car. This is a car that your great-grandchildren are going to be driving. But then if I do it up... You see,
it's a bit
some
proper,
shirts.
Isn't it?
See, Ben, let's see. Can you put the camera down a bit? See, your shirt's got a good.
Yeah, the top button's in the right place. I think
If you do the top button, you've got a good mid range.
I mean, I've still got a bit of.
You don't look completely. Mm. You look like you don't. You look like you may have a mammal, but down your shirt. But it's probably legal, and you've got all the paperwork.
Yeah, and it's not distressed.
It's not distressed. Whereas this shirt now up. I'm 40 feet. What are you getting off me now?
He's sort of like cricket umpire on a day off, I'd say.
Yeah, a bit preppy.
God. Yeah.
Yeah. So neither option's good.
Someone trying a bit too hard at their first parole meeting. That kind of
yeah. Anyway, yeah. So that's one. But that's right. I think I'm going to loosen it.
Great.
Should we say what film we're doing?
Yeah, let's talk about the film.
So, Henry, you chose it. The film is...
It's Long Legs.
Long Legs. And please be aware this is likely to be spoiler replete.
Yeah, as always.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's gonna be huge spoilers.
Now, I think what happened was I said to you, Henry, let's do a film corner, and then I said there's nothing good on at the cinema.
Well, yeah.
And I had a look and actually everything was bollocks. It was just wall to wall summer balls.
Well, something I've noticed last few years is that essentially, there's 3 weeks in the year when there's good films, which is just before the Oscars or something.
Yeah,
and the rest of the year is quite weak, isn't it?
But there isn't even like a summer blockbuster that I like the look of. Do you know what I mean? Because I think the major summer blockbuster is Wolverine versus. Yeah.
But the summer blockbuster Ryan is Reynolds. no longer aimed at the likes of us, is it?
Is that what the problem is?
I think
so. I think it might be because I'm finding the amount of publicity they're doing for that film is insane.
No, it's extraordinary. It's inescapable.
Everywhere you look, there's Ryan Reynolds and Hugh Jackman.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Being quite sort of...
Glib.
Glib.
And maybe it's good, but I don't think any of us have seen it.
It's obviously been a smash hit, but yeah, it's not... It's we're not on school holidays, are we? And it's aimed at people who are on school holidays, I think, largely speaking.
Yeah. So do you think I'm wrong, Mike, to get excited about the idea of there might be a good summer blockbuster that I would enjoy? Because I've aged out of that now and I need to let that go.
I do think, you need to change the system from the inside, I think, PP.
Well, write my own summer blockbuster.
I think you need to. I think you need to get yourself to Hollywood and take over a studio. That's what I'm suggesting.
But you know what it'll be like? It'll be like when you cook a meal and you spend ages on it and it's brilliant, but you can't really enjoy it yourself.
Oh.
So when you actually sit down to watch that summer blockbuster.
It's just gobbled up too quickly.
You'll keep on thinking, I shouldn't have cast Henry as all the characters. I shouldn't have listened
really,
to him.
He was really up my arse about it the whole time.
He was so up my arse about it, though. It was easier just to say, yeah, okay, in the end.
And my thinking was we could just CGI him out in the end.
And then CG Blake Lively, etc. And all the other great actors that had agreed, just had signed up for the project as well.
And had to be paid as well.
And had to be paid anyway. In fact, to pay them more, to pay them off. And to pay them both for doing it, and then to pay them an extra for not doing it. So it was great for them.
Yes. So yeah, and it was either that, which is the blockbuster of the year, or it was Despicable Me 5 or something, which is not my wheelhouse really.
Well, you're a Minion naysayer, aren't you?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I think they're dreadful. Inside Out 2, which might be okay, but
yes, I've heard good things about. But yeah, the I think the Despicable Me, whatever number it is, I mean that's a gift to parents of kids of a certain age, largely speaking, isn't it? That's a sort of service film.
It's mainly like, a childcare film.
Yeah, here's an afternoon. Yeah. Here's a thing. We've got a thing. One of your days is covered. Here's a thing.
Yeah. It's a sort of Calpol. Is that what Calpol is?
You should not use Calpol in that way.
To entertain your children for a day of the school holidays. What are we doing tomorrow? We're doing Calpol.
I mean, it's equivalent of something lucky happening, like a badger setting fire to itself by accident in your garden, non-fatally to the badger. So just something which entertains your kids for 3 hours, just like, but not that's non-fatally and not even non-painfully to the badger.
Just comically singed.
When your kids were small, Mike, and had a badger set itself on fire in your garden, what would you have done? Like, because I don't think that's like, come on, kids, let's watch this badger burn.
What did we do?
What did you do? Good question.
You get the deck chairs out, don't you? That's what they're for.
We get your deck chairs out and you start taking bookings from other families. Once you've got a badger,
a
knows
badger.
How to handle a Catherine wheel, not quite enough, you've got a moneymaker on your hands.
I'm looking at the cinema listings, right? So the other film that's out is Twisters, which I think is basically a remake of Twister. I've got no interest in that.
That is just like, the first one wasn't good enough to be remade. Oh, is it Twisters, is it? There's two.
I think even in the trailer, two of them merge.
There's two spinning cows.
Yeah,
exactly. Which one do I save? It's the ultimate Rosemary's Choice. Sophie's Baby. It's the ultimate one of them dilemma. The cow with the biggest udders. Now that's the most likely to survive a fall, you idiot. Can I say what I think about the Inside Out film? This is how I now feel about Pixar films. I feel like it's actually too, that to me feels like it's above my head. That's too clever. I can't be bothered with a film that clever. You know what I mean? They're so clever, those films. It'll be about just sort of the dissection of a human personality into different quadrants, whereby, and characters develop in those quadrants whose personalities represent that side of a human personality. And it's all like a kind of...
Which will stand up to any level of scrutiny. Right?
Any scrutiny.
It's Pixar. It's
completely impermeable to scrutiny.
Yeah.
And I just sort of can't face it. Do you know what I mean?
I know exactly what you mean,
brilliant.
Henry, yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's how I feel about it as well.
It'd be like, would you want to go and see Gary Kasparov, you know, naked, playing 3D chess in a huge glass sort of cage?
With Ian Botham.
I think 3D chess is his specialty anyway.
Well, he'd be very good at it. That's the point. It would be brilliant. Botham's body would continue to entertain and enthrall and shock in equal measure. But actually... It feels just like, I know it's brilliant already. I don't need to actually go and see just to have it ticked off. You know what I mean?
Also, I think I'm alone in thinking this. I think Pixar's shift to making sequels of its earlier films is a bit disappointing.
Yeah.
Because their whole thing was that they kept making loads of new great films.
Yeah.
And then in recent times, they've just gone, oh, let's just do another Finding Nemo.
Yeah.
And let's just do another Cars.
Exactly. Imagine putting out something that you think's quite good and then doing it over and over again in a really similar way for it.
It's embarrassing, isn't it? Really?
It's so embarrassing. I never saw Cars. Cars itself just felt cynical to start with. But
I think Cars is the one that's wholly for children. You know how every Pixar film is kind of for everyone?
Yeah.
Apart from Cars. Cars is only interesting if you're under 8, basically, I think. Someone will email in and tell me I'm wrong, but I don't think I'm wrong.
Okay, yeah, so there's that. There's Wolverine versus Smug. I'm sorry, there's just too much advertising. I can't deal with it. I can't watch that film now. I've spent at least 2.5 hours in their company just in the form of like 10-second clips on Instagram.
Not Lady Legs, Long Legs in the end, didn't it?
It did leave Long Legs.
But you're a big old horror fan.
I am a bit of a horror fan. So it appealed to me For various reasons.
That's their billing, wasn't it? This is the scariest movie of the year.
Yes. The trouble is, I fell for the... Well, we'll see if I fell for something or not, but it is a classic PR thing that they do to turn a horror film into an event, which is they sort of put rumours out that people who went to watch it had an awful, awful time. Yeah. And like, it was the worst evening of my life. And weirdly, people then want to go and see it, which sort of worked on me.
Do you remember they used to do, there used to be TV adverts for horror films where they would have like a low light camera in the cinema trained on the audience.
Yes, exactly.
And they'd show you clips of the audience going,
Oh yeah, like Paranormal, all that kind of stuff. You couldn't really do that with this one. That was all. That's kind of for jump scare movies, right? This is one that wasn't a jump scare one.
There's a couple of moments. Well, really, yeah.
Long Legs is a horror film starring Nicolas Cage.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah,
and it's not a less famous person. Well, no, but he's the famous person in it.
Yeah.
A very good actress. And various other people.
Yes, whose name I can't recall.
So remember, this is the concept of Film Corner. Please, I refer you back to the beginning of the episode if you're getting angry at this point, which we did tell you. Now, I mean, it appealed to me because I like horror. I do fall for that PR stuff about films being really awful. Also, I actually do have long legs. So I think part of me thought, maybe this is finally, I'm going to see myself on screen. And it's been quite a journey with my long legs.
So for me, I would never go and see a horror film in the cinema.
No.
Just not really my genre.
Yeah.
But when you said Long Legs, the thing that made me go, yeah, let's do this, was Nicolas Cage.
Oh, really?
Because he's good.
He is good.
He's good fun. He's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was the FBI angle for me all the way.
Ah, okay.
Ah, yes.
So it all had something.
So I thought I was going to see like a sort of remake of Silence of the Lambs, and I was up for it, basically.
So it was redolent of Silence of the Lambs, because just to explain, it's about an FBI agent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Who is tasked with solving these kind of, I guess, murders.
Mm-hmm.
Or situations in which normally the father in the family has killed all of the people in the family, including himself.
Family annihilation.
Yeah. But there's a sense of like, there's something going on here, basically.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's the rookie FBI agent with a personal take on the case, right?
Now, can I get an early git pick in?
Go on.
Yeah.
So a git pick is like a nitpick from a git. I'm a git. Here's my nitpick. Early on, they make a big deal of how she's kind of psychic.
Yeah.
So they're at the beginning, they're solving a different murder, and they're trying to look for the murderer, and she's just walking down the street, and she goes, he's in there. Yeah. It's in that house.
That was quite good, that bit, I thought.
Yeah.
It was quite spooky.
And her partner goes, well, that's based on nothing more than a hunch, but I'll go and have a chat with him. And he knocks on the door, and then he gets his head shot off by the murderer. And it turns out she's psychic. And they do some tests on her and she like aces the tests and they're like, you are psychic.
Yeah.
And then that never comes back ever again. And it's never explained how or why she's psychic.
I've forgotten that. There's quite a few bits like that in the film. Unfortunately, this film for me is a sort of trope smoothie,
right?
Isn't it? But essentially, like so many films are, unfortunately, these days, because they've put loads of tropes in a blender and blended them up and turned them into a kind of Huel... A kind of sort of homogenous paste.
Like a sort of senseless death of young partner kind of thing early on, that kind of
thing. Yeah.
The thing I did like about that is that it did tell you early doors, this isn't Silence of the Lambs, that there's something supernatural. There's some weird going on. So
yeah,
it did let you know early on. It's going to be a bit wonky and creepy here. But I agree with you. And I would have been perfectly happy with the rest of the film just to be a sort of, like a tribunal about, hang on, so you warn this guy, and then you oddly you did then tell everyone about it. Clearly, that's so you've been tested. Why have you got secret powers? Why are you psychic?
Yes.
Oh, I think I'm not sure, but I think it's because it turns out I've had a satanic doll maker living in the basement since I was 9 years old, and you pick up a thing or two over the years. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
I'd have very happily watched that sort of tribunal film as they unpick.
Yeah,
it's true. There are a lot of things which in real life in this film would have been, the whole storyline would have been bogged down in tribunals, wouldn't it, from very, very early on? Because
they could have Oppenheimed it.
They really could have Oppenheimed it, yeah.
It
would have been like a sort of 12-hour tribunal epic.
It's hard to know how to approach this film, really.
Yes.
I'm just going to say from the off, although this might be the sort of thing I should say at the end, it's a real film of two halves. So I don't like horror films, and I was a bit worried about going just because I don't, well, not worried, but I was like, I'm not going to enjoy this. I'm just going to, I'm going to be scared and it'll be unpleasant. And I found the first half really scary. Like really, really scary.
Oh, good. This is
and
good.
Like really creepy. And I was kind of looking through my fingers. Well, let's, all that.
Maybe we should talk. Let's just talk about the first half first, shall we? Then?
Yeah.
And then move on to the second.
And that
half.
Is mainly achieved, I think, through like sound design and stuff. So like,
yes,
all of the Foley, like everything they touched was really loud. So if they picked something up, it'd be really loud. And it
that's quite good.
And they do that kind of thing because it feels uncanny and it feels like anything could be the thing that is the problem.
Yes, yes.
And so I was really like, oh, this is horrible. And actually, that is kind of what you need out of a horror film, but I didn't like it because I was like, oh, this is horrible. I didn't like
the
it.
The scene in the cabin, in her cabin.
Yes, horribly scary.
Generally put the willies up.
Oh, no, that's true. I think you're right, you know. I think let's talk about it in two halves because the first half, I thought, I was really into it, actually, I've got to say. It was very creepy. It was very well shot. I thought. It looked amazing. I thought it was visually beautiful. It's set in
a kind of 90s.
Yes,
I thought it was like a kind of 70s or a kind of 80s as well at points.
Well, we had Clinton on the back wall, didn't we, in the office?
Oh, that's right.
Yes, they make it clear it's the 90s with the. You see Bill Clinton quite a lot.
Very for age. Yes, you're right.
Clinton is unexpectedly prominent in the film.
Yeah, but I think what it is Henry, it's that thing we've talked about before with music, which is that music from 1991 is 80s music.
Yeah.
Yes.
Because
yes.
of the.
Okay. Yeah.
So actually, a house in 1996 would have been full of stuff from the 70s, in the same way that my house is full of stuff that's about 20 years old. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah. Yes. Yes.
So I think they've kind of made it feel. They've tried to make it feel real by reflecting that in the 90s, no one's house looked like full of 90s stuff.
Yeah. Okay.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. I think that's right. Because what Clinton was when? When was Clinton?
92.
So it's kind of 80s-y looking a lot of it. The film.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah. And the cars. Look like from the 80s, but you think, well, actually, most cars are 10 years old, right?
So
Yeah.
But then it probably was a choice as well, because it felt creepy because everything's old and weird.
It was quite useful. Like, I mean, anything's useful. It's a bit more jeopardy when no one's got a mobile, right? If you can't just Google map
it. Yeah.
That's useful.
Although what I thought they did was, I reckon that they may have stuck the Clinton pictures in later because they were having arguments about when this film set. Because the lingering shots of Clinton is weird. It's so jarring, actually, in the film.
Do you think there's a blooper reel with George W. Bush in the background?
I think they might have tried a few different presidents to see which one worked best, in focus groups.
Kamala Harris. Set in the future. There's a bit later on where there's a flashback and Nixon's on the wall. Did you notice that?
Clever sausage.
Yeah.
Clever sausage.
But the first half I loved. I think also, partly because I'm, and this again is useful in the 90s because it's not just someone on a computer screen, right? I love any movie where some dogged investigator has to pull an all-nighter and spread loads of stuff on the floor and look at loads of pictures and bits of paper. I absolutely love that.
Well,
absolutely pure joy. And she did need to do that for a bit.
That's true. So the hero is her character's called Lee Harker. She's played by Micah Monroe, who I thought was excellent, actually.
Yeah.
But anyway, so that first half, there's lots of tension builds. Mm. It's all very well, nicely shot. Everything's very dark. As you say, the sound design is really creepy. It really creeps you.
Mm. And it's the idea that because she turns out, because she's psychic, they go, we need to put you on this case, which no one can crack, but we think that you can use your mega mind. Is that what they're saying?
I think that's the idea.
Yeah.
But again, I would have been happy with a slightly different movie where she was then recruited to the Satan squad of the FBI. That's right. It's a top secret squad.
Yeah. And we all have to wear swimwear because we're in the basement and it's really hot in here.
This is the Beelzebub division.
Yeah.
Take your clothes off, for God's sake.
And here's your regulation laser. This is top secret.
Laser and Bible.
I'd have been up for that, but it wasn't. It was just like a normal task force, right, or something. Just a fairly huge case that they just assigned to quite a young person who might have some ESP going on.
Yeah, and they explain all that to her in the car outside the house just before going in.
Yeah,
as well. So then they come across these murders. It's quite creepy and spooky. Have we had the scene in her house at this point? Her cabin. And that's after she first.
No, that's after she's on the case.
So she first looks into the case. The film felt to me like it was referring just to other films mainly. felt like it's a film that just existed from films rather than from life, if you know what I mean. Like, yeah. Everything, like, it was the classic satanic serial killer who leaves loads of clues, and they're to do with the Bible.
Encoded messages that you have to try and uncode.
Which I felt like, I feel like maybe it was the 90s, there was a spate of those.
Well, there's the Zodiac Killer, wasn't there? That's what it made me think of, because he writes kind of Zodiac-y...
And that's a real case.
Yeah.
Which I guess they all spring from, maybe.
That's a real case. But there were films like, there's those like sort of Kiss the Girls type, Morgan Freeman type thingies, whatever that character's called. Who's another brilliant FBI profiler or whatever. There was a whole spate of those. You're right. There was lots of
around Silence of the Lambs.
Yeah, great fun, super, creepy serial killer stuff.
No one was... There were just lots of scenes where there was a dead body on the slab in the mortuary, and people were pulling like all kinds of things, like decks of cards out of their noses, and like board games, all clues. Everything was clues.
He leaves a buckaroo at every scene.
So it was kind of a callback to that sort of thing. And there was, she worked out various codes and deciphered codes. Like, her being good at deciphering codes, I don't know why that was something she was good at. Was that on top of being psychic? Was that like a side talent?
Well, he'd almost given her the key, hadn't he? So the murderer visits her house, leaves some stuff in her house.
That was a creepy scene.
And he leaves stuff, and in that, is something that will basically allow her to undo the code. So he kind of wants this to happen, right?
Yeah. A shout out to her house, which was also an unnecessarily creepy looking house to live in, or at least like to choose to live in that space.
In an incredibly creepy location.
Incredibly creepy location. Yeah. How an estate
deep,
agent
deep
would
in the
shift
woods
that.
Of Oregon.
Deep in the woods. It had all the horror, it had all the things you need from a horror house, which is, it's mainly made of glass from the outside, so that you can see in, so there's no sense...
But wood from the inside.
There's glass from the outside so that you sense that anyone can get in, but it's also wooden on the inside so that you feel all trapped.
So is that is that two-way glass or one-way wood? I'm not sure which.
It's both attached to each other.
Okay. Well, so it's the kind of thing where the estate agent would have to be, now, obviously it's incredibly misty all the time, but I think we see this as a positive.
Yeah. Do you realise that the human body is actually 90% water? So the more humidity in the air, the more of you there is, anyway. But
so misty.
So misty. Now, people say that it's fucking terrifying at night here. I'm not gonna deny that, but that's something to negotiate with the seller about.
It made me knock off a couple of K.
But it's only fucking terrifying if it's completely silent or if there's any noise.
That's right.
When you see those scenes, you do think, because you imagine that the character is real and the world is real. Mm. So you think, is it not like this every time you go into your house? It must be terrifying all the time.
Oh, if I lived there and I was armed, the number of times I'd be just shooting into the bushes every single night before bedtime, running around the house in a panic, just letting off magazine after magazine.
And ironically, Mike, at some point, Mike, then having to face up to the fact that maybe you are the beast in the woods that you're reading about, that's shooting loads of people in your area.
So many postmen would have been killed by
so many postmen, so many destroyed recycling bins. The neighbours are absolutely sick of you.
It's the kind of house where if you were to buy it, it's hard to imagine, you know, negotiating with the seller, it's hard to imagine the seller being anyone other than that really creepy masked person that rode a robotic horse in the Olympics opening ceremony. What do you think?
That was Stephen Redgrave, wasn't it?
Stephen Redgrave. being ridden by Claire Balding. Also, what was good about they did this simple thing with the camera work, which is so effective, which is whenever she was sat anywhere in the house, behind her was an open door into another space where someone could just creep past at any point.
Black shadow.
Exactly, full of blackest of shadows. And you keep on thinking, someone with really long legs is about to scurry past.
I was constantly
with horrifyingly long
legs. To one side of the shot, into that space.
Exactly. You're never looking, because you're like, someone with long legs, and how are they going to be carrying, are they going to be wearing like short shorts with the long legs?
To accentuate the long legs? Are they going to have a Cuban heel? To stretch out the back a bit? Do they need that? maybe they're self-conscious and they're going to be in a flat shoe. I don't know.
Or are they going to be wearing really wide chinos to try and detract from the length of their legs? Maybe they've actually, that's something they've worked against with their fashion choices. How are they going to be pulling off the long legs? And are the legs going to be so long that they could kill? That's what I kept on waiting for.
And is it going to be a daddy long legs?
Is it going to be a fucking daddy long legs? Because apparently they're so poisonous. They've got enough poison in them to kill someone, right? If there's a million of them or something.
They could kill the FBI.
I thought all the way through, almost to the end, that daddy long legs were going to be involved in some way.
Yeah.
But it wasn't the case. Just to explain to those who haven't watched, at every, I think I'm right saying that every of these murdered destinations?
It's a bit of a creepy way of looking at them.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. It is left a letter. The letter's written in code, but it's signed in English with long legs.
Okay, yeah.
So that's how they know who they're looking for. But
long legs, I like it as a title because it is a bit creepy, isn't it? Mm. It's got a creepy quality to it, which sort of drew me in a bit.
So then it all gets quite complicated.
She does some code breaking. Now, here's my level of intelligence. I'm intelligent enough to assume that the code breaking stuff was all kind of bollocks, but not intelligent enough to actually know that it was bollocks. But she kept on saying Thursday's the 14th, and it's 7 days later, it's always a Tuesday. And then 3 days later, it's always the 14th. That's why the murder always happens on a Tuesday. Do you remember that?
Which is a triangle.
Which is a triangle. There was a lot of talk like that, and I was thinking to myself, if I could be asked to think this through properly, I could probably work out that none of this really makes sense.
But equally, if you were on an FBI squad and you were set to go and have a look through these documents and you came back and you'd drawn a fucking triangle over some numbers and another line through it, you'd have been fucking for it, Henry. You'd have been absolutely... What is this supposed to be, Henry? Well, I think it's a triangle.
The way I work is... If I'm in FBI, the way I work is 100% hunch. If it ain't a hunch, I ain't even interested. I only work on gut feeling. I've not had a gut feeling for 2 years. I'm waiting. And I say, yeah, sure, I'm on holiday. I've taken an extended holiday, but if I get a hunch, I'm seeking the hunch. Sometimes the hunch is in a really good breakfast buffet. Not so far.
Now, in terms of this film being a film of two halves, the half point... And this is kind of my problem with the whole film, is when you meet, or you finally sort of see and meet Longlegs, which probably happens more than halfway through, but it's kind of the midpoint, really, where you go, there he is.
And everyone's thinking average legs. I mean, everyone in the cinema.
not least of all, because we've known Nick Cage for a long time now. We know he hasn't got extraordinarily long legs.
So we're anticipating, have they CG'd it, or have they used an old-fashioned animatronic techniques, for example, having him suspended from the ceiling?
Two massive pepper armies hanging down.
Either that, or with another actor, the other way round, upside down, playing the bottom half of his legs.
But buried from the waist up, but down.
Buried from the waist up in hopefully, fingers crossed, everyone, breathable concrete. a new form of breathable concrete. And playing his legs the other way around, and then CGing out the feet. Obviously.
Well, they become the knees.
They just both need to wear green shoes and they're okay. That's why I would have said on the call sheet, please do remember to bring your green shoes. Otherwise, we're really stuffed.
We're
just
going
to have to paint them pink and make it look like you've got massive, weird knees.
Yeah, you can CG in the knees from a third actor then.
That's right. Exactly. Also, you can CG in the backs of the legs of anyone, people from the production crew, anyone, just to then superimpose on top of the two sets of actual knees, which you need to be removed.
Yeah,
but yeah. So bring your green shoes, and also the other thing was make sure you buy them on Amazon at least 2 weeks in advance, because it's actually when you come to think about it, there's almost no such thing as green shoes. Think about it. Incredibly rare. Can you think of green shoes?
And you will want to break them in. Yeah, green flip flops. Yeah, they're easy to come by, but they're not going to do it.
They're not going to do it. And do break them in, because we've spent so much money hiring all these different people with legs that we can't afford to edit out any screams or noises of pain that you might make.
Or blisters.
So the whole first half of the film is, oh my God, there's this creepy bloke.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. What's his deal? What's going on? Blah, 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 blah. And then you meet him and it's just a fucking bloke in a rubber mask.
I couldn't tell if he's a guy in a rubber mask or if Nick Cage has just gone really weird.
Well, it's a prosthetic face.
It's a prosthetic face, isn't it? Yeah.
But it reminded me of, I don't know if you've ever seen this, it's quite famous, Gordon Ramsay once did an episode of, Restaurant Hell, or whatever it's called.
Right.
Where he would be prostheticed up to look like someone else.
Oh, God.
And then go into...
Murder a family.
And then go into a restaurant, have the meal, and then pull off the prosthetic at the end and go, it was me all along, Gordon Ramsay.
Oh, my God.
Is that what it was reminding... Is that what it was... Because, Ben, it was really reminding me of something. I couldn't work out what it was. Maybe that's what it was.
Well, I'm going to share with you a photograph of Gordon Ramsay in a prosthetic. He's been made up to look like an airline pilot. If listeners want to see this image, they can Google Gordon Ramsay pilot, and I think it should come up. There he is.
Why have they done? He doesn't look like a human being. Why have they done that? You'd be more likely to smell a rat. You'd be less likely to smell a rat if just put Gordon Ramsay in a pilot's hat, and you just probably wouldn't think it was Gordon Ramsay because most people aren't Gordon Ramsay. You're not looking out for it.
There's also the issue that someone's had to say, "Yes, sorry, Gordon, because of all the rubber, we can't actually fit the hat on anymore." And that's the biggest one there is.
I'm afraid the hat is just all we've managed to do is buy the widest hat you can get for a human head, and then it's nowhere near wide enough for the head we've got in mind for you. Which is twice as wide as your widest possible human.
So if you haven't seen this film, it's going to be really hard to describe, but I think he just looks mad.
He doesn't look a human. He looks like...
He sticks out like a sore thumb.
The other thing he looks like a bit like is... kind of looks like an actress from the 60s who's had huge amounts of plastic surgery, like an amount of plastic surgery that has made them
unrecognizable. Many years before they were ready for it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Before anyone had worked out actually how to do it.
And the whole thing with him, I don't know what it was, but it didn't quite work for me. It kind of annoyed me. He's, for some reason, obsessed with Mark Bolan from T-Rex.
Mm. Yes.
Which just felt like a really annoying little thing they decided to put in.
Well, they put a quote from T-Rex at the beginning, which was at that first half of the film, where everything about the film is quite cool, quite tense, kind of is working. Yeah. You forgive that. You know, it's quite felt quite interesting. Oh, there's T-Rex quote, and it's quite a spooky line.
Feels quite indie. From a lyric. Like, ooh, I'm at a... Yeah.
They put at the beginning.
Film festival.
He's very reminiscent of the Silence of the Lambs baddie, isn't he?
Buffalo Bill.
His lair. But it sticks out like much more of a sore thumb, like, and goes out about in public, right, in his get-up, in a very rural setting, where most definitely at some point someone would have said, I mean, it's that guy. That really weird guy.
It's
him. Come on. We can lock him up for something, surely. You know?
Blimey. I think, Mike, you have to check. This film has taught us anything, is it?
Mike, for God's sake, take your firearm. Mike, no! This is my problem with loads of films, where the first half is like, oh my God, 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 we're going to meet this guy.
Yeah.
And then you meet them and it's like, ah.
I know this.
Like, I even get that, even though Silence of the Lambs is amazing, when you do meet, is it Buffalo Bill? Is that his name?
Yeah, Buffalo Bill. Mm.
It's a bit of a letdown, isn't it?
It is a letdown.
I've never found that was... I
didn't find him that scary. He's just a bit of a weirdo. With loads of moths.
That's it. You just go, oh, they're just a weird bloke.
Just a moth guy.
I did find him scary.
But I think the trouble with him was he couldn't be as scary as Hopkins. That's the thing. Because Hopkins was the creep, was the... So... Yeah, so essentially, there's lots of kind of anticipation, and the film is very good at creating anticipation and creepy moments, and a sense of foreboding and stuff.
Yeah,
and then when the ducks are in a row,
dread, and a good tick,
horror tick, unease tick, all those emotions are set up. Beg your pardon?
Missed.
Yeah. Tick. But then, as the ducks get shot down, you start to think, what were those ducks actually hiding? We'll never know now because they're all dead.
And it's just a bloke in a rubber mask going, oopsie poopsie.
There's a lot of that. He just plays it like ultra sort of camp and sort of giggly and sort of weird.
Which presumably the director would have known that would have happened, right? It's Cage, right? Cage, like, he has a bit of fun.
Yeah.
He goes to work to have a good time. He's not...
I'm not saying he did a bad job necessarily, but I just think it wasn't scary after that.
He didn't fill me with dread every time I saw him.
No.
I think the first time we saw him, he did, because I think I genuinely thought he was about to murder a small child.
In that flashback?
Yeah.
That was he was scary then. Although, actually, even then, that shot ended with him kind of going, in a way that was supposed to fill you with blood-curdling dread, and then the opening credits kind of rolled properly. Yeah. And it was a moment where it was the first moment where I thought, oh, that didn't actually...
Yeah. Whereas the moment when he gets arrested was actually quite funny, I thought.
He's standing at a bus stop.
Standing at a bus stop with a guitar case and a suitcase, and there's, for some reason, FBI agents coming from both sides, from both ends of the road at the same time. Yeah.
His sweet Gibson Flying V, Mike.
He had a Flying V.
No.
He had a Flying V.
This is the true horror. So then they bring him in, and he just sort of...
He's not giving anything away, is he?
He's not giving much away, but then he kills him. To fair play, he kills himself on the top of a table, which is the hardest bit of a table to bash your head in on.
It's true. He doesn't go for the sides.
Doesn't go for the corners. Well, second hardest. You can't. The under surface, I suppose, would be harder. But, yeah.
Or swallowing one of the legs would do it.
Yeah.
He just smacks his head.
Headbutts
the top of the table until he dies. Is that possible? No.
I just found it. The fact that he was doing it annoying. It wasn't like creepy or horrible or awful. Oh.
I wondered why the gentleman who'd been waiting outside didn't come in a bit earlier.
And also, she made no attempt to stop him at all, did she? She just sort of stood there.
Yeah.
We get some flashbacks to... Oh, she meets her mother a few times, doesn't she? And then we start getting flashbacks to do with the mother.
The hoarder.
She's a hoarder.
Why is she a hoarder?
She's creepy. Also, another element we haven't talked about yet is creepy ventriloquist dolls start coming into it in the second half, which is just...
They're pivotal.
But to me, that's just not doing it for me.
I think I find it scarier when it is a human, like a really weird human. Like if it had been a doll maker and who'd just been an ultra manipulator or something, rather than...
Yes, but it turns out that he was genuinely possessed by Satan, basically.
He was a sort of familiar of Satan in some way, under instruction to make possessed dolls with weird orbs in them.
Which are full of, like, Satan juice.
Full of purple Satan juice.
There's a bit where there's a doll has been made of the FBI agent.
Yeah.
And
I didn't realise that was her, was it?
That was her, yeah.
That's pivotal, Henry.
Oh, I didn't realise that.
Yeah.
And they shoot its head off.
Yeah.
And then some black stuff comes out of her head. No idea what that was meant.
Oh, yeah, I didn't know. At that point, I was...
Was that her satanic psychic powers? I don't know.
I think so. I think that was like, I think this, the idea was that she'd been under the spell, right? So the meaning of that was that whatever the devil had done to her meant that she had these psychic powers, but it also meant that she wasn't able to quite reach the memory that she'd grown up with a satanic doll maker living in her basement.
I see.
So she genuinely didn't know he was there. Really, a bit.
Had he actually been living in their basement, had he?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't even realise that.
From that flashback scene, I think the idea was that he'd been there all along. I mean, this is where I might be grotesquely wrong. And
no, you're correct. Right, I think, yeah.
But he did think, so his modus operandi was that using her mum as a sort of sidekick, they'd go around people's houses, the mum would offer them, would knock on the door on someone's on a kid's birthday and offer them...
He had
them
had to explain that to them first. To bear in mind, the first time they met, he was talking to the child in the garden. Mum had come along and been very cross, and then he said, hang on. If I do go away, then I'll kill you. But if you... just let me stay, and then we can kill loads of people together. All right? Let's make a deal.
So the mum signed up to work with Satan in order to save her own daughter.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But his modus operandi is to give people... She knocks on the door, gives people a doll as a present. Doll.
Yeah.
She's a nun, and she says it's a gift from the church.
Yeah.
Was she only pretending to be a nun?
Yeah.
I thought she was. She was a nun for some reason. Like an evil nun.
It was a costume.
It was just a cosy.
Yeah.
And she'd give people this incredibly creepy-looking, horrible doll, like a horrendous doll they would readily accept. And happily, they were always really up.
Hugely, inconveniently massive porcelain doll.
Yeah.
needs its own chair.
And just with all the classic hallmarks of an evil doll, which is not enough hair to cover its sort of shiny plastic head and eyes looking in slightly different directions.
Delivered by a very anxious, bogus nun.
And then the doll sort of has Satan inside its brain and its eyes.
Yeah, or its ball bearing.
Yes, its evil ball bearing brain. And it kind of compels the people in the house to, or someone in the house to murder the other people in the house.
Yeah.
And she watches and that's that.
A couple of things right with that.
Yeah.
Well, I might be wrong about this, but in my understanding of, like, how scary do you find Satan as a concept?
Well, this is it. As soon as it's Satan, it's not that scary for some reason.
I think as a kid, I would have found it very, very, very scary. I think I attended enough Sunday school sessions and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, as a kid, it would have been super scary. But now it's like it's removed. That's why I rather Buffalo Bill, because it's...
Yeah,
the mad killing human for me is scarier than.
But also, am I not right in saying there's no reference in scripture to Satan going around killing people? He's an angel who falls. He's a fallen angel who gives Adam and Eve the apple and stuff. I mean, like, it's not that scary. I mean, it's not nice, but he doesn't go around killing people, does he? In the Bible, it's just Satan. He's one of God's angels.
Are you coming out as pro Satan? Well, guys, Satan's not that bad.
I just don't think Satan's that. Just like a character from the Bible. It's like,
he's done his time, for God's sake.
For me, Satan isn't scary.
I know what you mean, because I watched Hereditary is one of the few horror films I've watched and really enjoyed.
See, I haven't been able to face that.
Oh, it's amazing. Mm-hmm. But in that, the baddie, this doesn't give much away, Mike, the baddie is a kind of demon called Paimon or something.
See, that's more scary.
Yeah. That is more scary than Satan.
Yeah.
I don't know why, though.
Yeah. Hmm. It's a Geordie Baker, isn't it? The Paimon. Would you not buy my Paimon?
Oh, no. Dear me.
Played by Sting.
Played by Sting. It's a great film. That was quite frightening.
It's the Paimon.
Mike. It's the Paimon. I actually had quite a weird experience going to the cinema to see this film, because I think the truth is, when you see a film, there's actually two films happening. There's two narratives happening. Yeah. There's a narrative on the screen, and there's the narrative of you spending 2 hours in a room.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
There's two stories going on concurrently. Mm-hmm. And if the one on the screen isn't sufficient to distract you from the one that's going on in your own life, that might be a film sign that the film isn't doing its job properly. I had actually quite a creepy opening. So I went to see it at View as well, Mike. And I went to get my ticket, and it was that thing, you know, that thing where they put you in the mini cinema that's sort of the size of two sheds.
Yeah, we were in the mini cinema.
Yeah. I find that a bit disappointing. Have you had that experience, Ben?
Yeah, when you go, this is kind of like a big telly.
Yeah, it's screen 10.
Yeah, I didn't mind that, though, because the screen was still very big. And also, it was quite populated. Like, people, I always feel a bit sad if I go and see a movie and it's three people in a massive auditorium.
That's true. No, so actually, I didn't mind. I was a bit like, oh, it's screen 10. It's the one where it's a big telly. But the other thing that was weird was that the woman gave me a piece of paper with a code written on it and said, go down the stairs.
Written in ancient script.
written in ancient blood. Have you ever had that?
No.
A small strip of paper with a code. Right. So I went down the stairs, turned right like she told me to, and I got to a door. Essentially, the door to the cinema was like one of those toilet doors in a prep where you had to put the code in.
Oh.
So I had to do 431G.
You had to punch it in?
I had to punch it in to get into the cinema.
That's really weird. Was it actually a bog? Were you sat in the bog? Was the screen just... like a Samsung phone someone had put on its side next to the toilet roll.
Yeah, but Mike, the digital quality of... Have you actually seen a film on a Samsung screen? It's basically IMAX in your pocket. I don't know, it was a very peculiar setup, but I chunked in my code on those, like, meaty metal buttons.
Yeah.
Heavy, like, handle twist. And I was in. And I was into the cinema... And it was, but yeah, you're right. The screen was actually a decent size. We were all packed in. I was squeezed between two sets of people. But the other thing that happened in the cinema that was quite cool was I've never had this before. It had a kind of a sort of table that came out yeah. came out over your body.
Yeah.
Did you have that? So I think, Mike, you've had the same experience.
Were you in hospital, Henry?
It was a bit like that. Yeah, like a little sort
and
of
they
desk.
They attached a kind of liquid drip into my arm to sort of inject the narrative into my actual body.
It was a table like you normally have in sort of 80s American high school films. That sort of swing desk thing, but also with a beverage container.
So you had the same thing with the beverage container. So I got my popcorn there, put my Coke in the thing. Yeah. And then also had a button you pressed and your feet went up, Mike. Did you have this like a lazy boy? Your feet went up. Your legs.
You could lazy boy it if you wanted, yeah.
So I lazy boyed my legs right up. Okay. I was working this out as the film was starting. And this thing happened where my legs got in position and I'm wearing Birkenstocks, one on each foot. just as the film was starting, the Birkenstock on my left foot fell off.
Oh no.
And I was there with my feet up on the lazy boy thing.
Yeah.
All my row had their legs up.
Yeah.
Had their legs up, I mean.
It's a team effort. Well, you mentioned earlier on you've got long legs.
Do you have long legs?
Sometimes you need four people on each side.
Sometimes
perfect strangers to give you a hike.
But then I was ultra self-conscious. I don't know if you have this. I was ultra self-conscious because the film was starting. Mm. It was quite, you know, very quiet and tense. Everyone's concentrating. And I was thinking about, I don't want to move now. I can't reach into my bag.
I'm just going to have to put my popcorn cart over my left foot.
I'm just going to have to stick on. But I was like, I can't move. I can't reach down to my foot. Can you understand that feeling? I was so self-conscious about motion and stuff. I was like, I'm going to have to sit through this film with a Birkenstock on one foot. Okay.
Mm.
So at this point we're in the scene where she's having the flashback to him in the garden.
Yeah.
So on the one level I'm thinking about that, but on the other level I'm thinking about I've got a Birkenstock on one foot. Can you imagine that?
Who's the bigger monster here? Me or this guy on the screen?
So the film, what you're saying is the film failed the Birkenstock test.
It failed the Birkenstock test.
Any film they'll test it with an audience. They've all got one Birkenstock on.
Yeah.
Are they able to forget about that?
Can they forget about it? In fact, a truly great film, you should be able, at the end of the film, you should look down, you should have a lobster on one foot.
And that's wearing one of the other Birkenstock.
Yeah, and you haven't noticed because the film's been that engrossing. I think eventually, the other thing I thought, what is the social acceptability of kicking off the right-hand Birkenstock and being a guy with his feet out in the cinema?
And not at a special screening of The Hobbit. One of the few places that would be acceptable.
Or at a sort of medical demonstration in the O2 in front of a gathering of the world's top foot doctors.
Farukcom.
Farukcom.
Where popcorn has a different meaning.
Yeah. And hot dogs has the same meaning. You're welcome to eat hot dogs throughout the show, although we do warn you that people will tend to gag quite a lot. And go off the idea of meat or even of of breathing when exposed to this man's feet. So, because also then I think to myself, they don't know I've got fungal foot issues. They don't know.
Oh, nor did I until this moment. That puts this whole thing into a whole different light, doesn't it?
They'll assume I'm just eating cheesy popcorn.
You were spore dusting the cinema.
No, but eventually I kicked off the right. But how would you feel about someone in the cinema next to you having bare feet?
I would hate it.
Would you?
I think it would be, it's awful.
And bare feet, they're actually up on a sort of raised plinth.
Worse,
you see them.
I think there's very few people that could get away with that.
Yeah,
I think.
So, long legs.
Yes.
I think this episode's probably been a bit confusing because it's quite a knotty film.
Mm. Mm.
There's a lot that happens that we can't really talk about because it's quite complicated.
Yeah. And also, confusing. We're not very good at this.
Not at all, no.
But I think we should conclude with, I guess, basically saying, what did we think overall, I think?
Personally, I'm going to give it 2 hot beans.
Out of how many beans?
Out of, that's up to you.
All right.
Okay. No, I think out of 5, I'll give it 2 hot beans. That's a bit harsh, isn't it?
Pretty harsh, right. But... you know, it's your opinion.
I genuinely enjoyed it, but I also am aware that I'm someone who doesn't get out much.
Mm.
And
so for you, is it like a similar level to Trip to B&Q?
Yeah, exactly. If I'm going out, it's because I'm doing a gig. Do you know what I mean? It's not just, but there's the pure just, yeah, with a friend. So maybe that confuses things because I did enjoy myself.
Oh, Mike, so you took a friend?
Yeah.
What did the friend think of it?
I think we were both a bit, we both enjoyed it, but we both had questions. We were both slightly unsettled. There was lots of other stuff going on. I mean, for example, like we were on our way home and we decided not to have a pint afterwards. He was done. He had some stuff to do the next day, but then he went home and then his wife had obviously thought he'd be out for another hour. And, you know, when you come back into the home and someone isn't ready for you to come back, there's just disappointment.
Was she shagging Nicolas Cage?
Nothing. Nicolas Cage wasn't involved. I think she was just enjoying a very well-earned bit of quiet.
Yeah.
Mm. And all of a sudden, the noise of the key in the lock came too early. And he was basically sent back out of his house.
The pillock's back.
And so we did go for a drink. So there was lots of other stuff going on. I'm going to give it a 7. I enjoyed it. I don't think I'd revisit it. Silence of the Lambs, I'd revisit.
Oh, yeah.
I'd watch it's not in weekly. This...
Yeah,
I'll give it a 7. Although part of that 7 might be the fact that I had some nice times with my friend Will, and I got an airing.
So, Mike, you're giving it 7.
I'm giving it 7 beans.
So you've got an out of 10 system. I've got an out of 5 system.
Yeah,
and I'm giving it 35
out of minus 50.
I'm giving it 35 out of 50, or maybe actually 30 out of 50. Okay. I think it's a classic 3-star film.
I mean, you could almost say 3 out of 5, couldn't you, for 30 out of 50?
Yeah, but that takes away the opportunity. It could have been 31.
That's true. Okay, fair enough. Yeah.
I think it feels it's classically 3-star in that.
Yeah, yeah.
I enjoyed it. I'm glad I went. I don't love horror films, but yeah, it was doing what it was meant to be doing. But the one thing it didn't do is I've not thought about it since at all.
Yes.
Hasn't come to mind at all. Whereas a really creepy film will sometimes stay with me for a few days and just kind of like, oh, creepy.
Yeah.
And I will never think of it ever again now. Once this thing is edited and put out.
Yeah.
I will never think of that film again. I'll forget I saw it.
So that means if tomorrow afternoon someone rings on the doorbell and it's a nun offering you a creepy sort of mannequin of yourself, you'll probably say, yeah, come in, yeah.
Take a punt.
And you come,
I remember signing up for a competition for a massive porcelain doll of myself. But
yeah. Do you know what I mean? So you won't even take the learnings that are there.
But do you know, I think that's what Mike's saying. He'll never watch that film again. I'm never watching that film again.
I think fundamentally it had style, and then you're waiting for content, and the content never arrived.
Ooh.
Oh, I like that.
That's quite good. You sounded like a real nice. pro reviewer there.
God, that was pro review shit. Yeah. That's what I think.
So there we are. Well, Plemons Central. In every episode of Film Corner, we think about what character Jesse Plemons could have played.
Well, the obvious casting is obviously in the Nicolas Cage role.
I would have liked to have seen Plemons as the mother. I think Plemons as the mother would have given some interesting flavours. The hoarding, freaked out, sort of witch's familiar style mother.
What I'm going to say is that instead of a porcelain doll, what if at every family she'd delivered a small Jesse Plemons in a box?
As a gift.
As a gift.
A kind of perfect half-size replica.
Exactly.
And if you crack it open, it's full of little chocolate Plemonses.
What I will say is I think our previous episode of Film Corner was about Under Paris, which was just a dog shit movie.
A
lot of people ended up watched it before listening to the... Because they wanted to have watched it first.
Okay, yeah.
I think the people who will have watched it first on our behalf, I don't feel quite so guilty about, because I think...
No. It was. It felt worth a watch. I don't regret the watch by any means. And I think also hats off to the filmmakers, because I think, you know, they put the bloody work in. Do you know what I mean?
For sure. Yeah. And it's been a hit. It's been a massive hit.
But if you're being if you're doing a film corner, you got to do your git picks, haven't you? You got to try and be a bit snippy about something someone's toiled on for 3 years solidly. Find something to be mean about.
Anyway, until next time.
Yes, cheerio. Thanks for listening.
Goodbye.
Goodbye. Bye-bye.